Welcome to the Kingdom Crossroads Podcast with Pastor Robert Thibodeau. Using an interview format, Pastor Bob will introduce you to men and women whose ministries are impacting this world with the gospel, and will also provide commentary and insight on end-time prophetic events we now see happening in the news. Now here is Pastor Robert Thibodeau.
Hello, everyone, everywhere. This is Pastor Robert Thibodeau. I want to welcome you to the Kingdom Crossroads podcast today. You know, many of our listeners have their own businesses, or they're starting their own businesses, and they're possibly trying to scale their own businesses. But often, it's a road that's filled with potholes, pitfalls, and dangers that you don't even know exist. And it's situations like these that will really test your faith. It'll test your willingness to continue. They will always test your resolve. Well, my guest today specializes in helping you to succeed through strategic partnerships. Mario Knoffel started off selling blenders door-to-door with only $300 in his bank account. Today, he runs several multi-million dollar companies in a wide variety of industries, including e-commerce, consulting, and also in the blockchain industry. Now, Mario is the founder of the Athena Group of Companies, a business conglomerate that operates in more than 40 different countries. And he's here today to tell us about how he can help you to succeed, grow, and take your business to the next level. Help me welcome to the program, Mario Knoffel. Mario, thank you for taking so much time out of your schedule just to visit with us today. I do appreciate it.
Pleasure is mine, Robert.
Amen. Now, the first question I have for you is to tell us about how you got started down this path. I mean, I talked briefly about you start off selling door to door. Tell us about those days and how you transitioned into really doing what you're doing now.
The story is interesting because I was doing banking and finance, mm-hmm. and I did not even know what the term entrepreneurship meant. Most of the decisions I took back then were out of logic. So I was just obsessed in learning. So I was always obsessing over something. Back then I was learning as much as I can in self-development in terms of my personality. And then I saw a video on YouTube of a kid who made his first $1 million at age 14. And wow. I realized, I think I was about 21 at the time, 2021. And I realized that at 21, I'm definitely not too young to start my business. And if someone at 14 can do it, the whole path of finishing university and then getting a job and then going, I wanted to start working for a bank and then slowly go up the ranks and travel the world, etc. Mm-hmm. That vision is very flawed. And when I realized that and the ease of being able to launch a business, I immediately dropped out of university. I almost finished university, but I dropped out and I was doing well. And I went out door knocking. Why door knocking? Well, it was even though it doesn't fit my personality. Back then, I was very introverted, not shy, but just I kept to myself. I was very proud. I would not want to, walk right into someone's office and try to sell them something. But that's the first job I got. And it was a commission-only door knocking position. I went there, interviewed someone in a car when he was seeing a customer for like 10 minutes, not even that. And then gave me a few flies and said, hey, go out there and start selling the product. And that's how it all started for me.
Amen. I've had to sell door to door myself for a little bit. And, they use the law of large numbers. The more doors you knock, the more no's you get brings you one step closer to the yes. Is that what you found?
Look, I think everything in life is a numbers game to an extent. Quality matters, but it's not one or the other. So going in the right locations to find the right businesses right would help. So a region that can afford your product, that will be interested. It's not saturated with competitors. So doing that due diligence for any business, really. When you want to enter a certain market, do your homework. Who else is in there? Competition is not bad. It means there's demand. But how hard is competition? What's the price point? The customers are going to be into basic market research, whether it's door knocking or launching a new software business. But then once you do that initial due diligence, next is it's a numbers game, basic
right
math.
Yeah, amen. That's right. And when you're the boss, when you may be the solepreneur in a lot of businesses, but you still have to have accountability. How important is accountability in business? And there is a difference between accountability and responsibility as well, correct?
Yes. even if it's some responsibility, accountability, owning up to anything that happens in a business allows you to keep it within your scope of control. Now, you have to understand there are things outside your control. There are things that will happen that you cannot impact.
Right.
Who gets elected as a president, if there's an economic crisis because the banks made a few wrong decisions, or whether a new war breaks out in some countries.
Right.
So those things are beyond your control. But there are other things within your control that you could do that can impact you. Focus on those and don't focus on the things that you cannot change. Now, I'm not saying this out of experience. I've researched that topic. Mm-hmm. When you focus on things that you cannot control, that will only waste your energy, waste your time, and it could put you in a bad state of mind. You can sit there complaining all the time about the economy or where you are at the moment because you're focusing on things that are outside your control. But if you focus on things and try to be accountable for where you are at the moment, it allows you control of your life. There was one person who I like listening to. I can't remember his name. But he said he likes to Grant Cardone, who's an influencer.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
I was speaking to him a while ago now, about 2 years ago. And I disagreed with him to an extent, but he likes to hold himself accountable to everything that happens. Now, this is not the best way of doing it because, again, you have to admit there's things that you cannot control. A war is not because Grant, it's not Grant's fault. But when you do that, though, it gives him the control and the ability to change things that will lead towards a certain path. So if a war breaks out, well, he's not going to stop the war, but he can move to a new country. If the economy goes bad, he could find new opportunities because people still spend money, but they spend it in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
So that mentality is, if you hold yourself accountable to everything in a productive way, then you get value out of it.
Okay. Amen. Yeah. So basically just focus on what is in your control and then
act on it. Yeah. So focusing on it is good, but you have to act on it. That's the whole purpose of, Grant holding himself accountable to everything around him, anything that happens, is not really the best way of doing it,
mm-hmm.
but it did allow him to take action on everything. He whatever happened, whatever hit him, he would do something about it. And I'm the same, and I'm not bragging, but one thing that happened to me, not the same as in I hold myself accountable, but I do take action. Like whatever happens, there's something I can do about it. And then there's a good book about it. If someone's going through a tough time, I recommend a book, very short book called The Obstacle is the Way. It's about, having a stoic mindset around things. So whenever something bad happens, you're trying to find the opportunity in it. Last year, I went through a scam. I was scammed by someone who I trusted. Yeah, I lost a lot of money and on a personal level. It hit me really hard. Yeah. In that same month, I went through a personal crisis. Plus, I was diagnosed with a tumor. It's non-cancerous, not serious in the head. But back then, I didn't know that.
Right.
So a lot of things happened in 1 month. But I tried to find, make something out of them, turn them into a positive. And it worked well. Being scammed pushed me to the edge. And I started personal branding. I started building because that was one of the reasons he was able to scam me because I was very private. No one knew anything about me. Didn't even have Facebook. But what I did is I used that as an opportunity to start getting my name out there. I opened a LinkedIn account. I didn't even have that. And I owned all these companies. My team started Instagram. I don't have Facebook. And I started pumping out videos. You saw a few of them already, you mentioned. But pumping out as much value as I can. And that brought me tremendous value the 12 months that followed. So I used something that was really, really negative. There's nothing positive about it. Losing a lot of money, losing people close to me on a personal level, it killed me, almost destroyed my company, which is stable now, one of the companies. But I turned it into an opportunity where the obstacle, the issue became something positive. So that's a mindset that I think could change someone's life in business and in life in general tremendously. And it's a mindset that's helped me a lot as well.
Amen. All right. You mentioned about, you can't control what happens in other countries and things like that. And not every country is the same. We have listeners all over the world. You have clients and businesses all over the world. How can you help people in different cultures succeed in business designed just for their culture and not necessarily the Western culture? Now, everyone thinks about doing business in the United States, but there's people all over the world that need your products and services.
You love the answer. I think this will give a lot of ideas to a lot of people, especially if you already have a business. Now, I've got the privilege, and I'm really thankful for it, to travel around the world. You know, I was in Berlin yesterday, week before that in Poland, now I'm in Paris. And, you know, I do see all those cultures. And sometimes I sit there thinking, you know, looking at their products, I'm like, man, this is the same thing that I saw in London a few weeks ago, but they haven't done this or that. You know, they're a bit behind. Now, one thing that I've done really well, and as you mentioned in the intro, I've got businesses in over 30, 40 countries, is I find something that works in one country, especially a progressive country like the US, like Asia, you know, Korea, Japan, even China now. They come up with ideas that are always ahead of the curve. So I find ideas, especially in Silicon Valley. You know, I told you about the other podcast. They analyze trends. They did say one thing that, you know, that got my attention. They said anything that starts in Silicon Valley, usually other places catch on, because Silicon Valley is very progressive in terms of business coming up with ideas and testing things. Some of them fail, some of them don't. And the things that succeed there, what happens, and based on their study, you know, they research the topic, then other cities, other countries start to catch on. And what some people do is they actually get ideas from Silicon Valley and then replicate them in other cities. And then what other people do, and what I'm doing right now with one of my businesses, is I get ideas out of the US, out of Korea and Japan. And I look at trends in those countries, some Western countries, some Nordic countries, and then replicate them in Eastern Europe, and, you know, some Western, you know, in Italy, in Spain, because humans are humans all around the world. We have more similarities than differences, a lot more. So when that clicks, when you realize that something that worked in one country as a business will work in other countries. So if someone made millions selling, hundreds of millions selling mattresses in a box in the US, well, that means people like that concept, and there will be a time when that will work in Western Europe, Eastern Europe, etc. So you can start with Germany, France, Italy, and some people do that. And there's a lot of money to be made in those countries, you know.
Yeah.
Australia, for example, where I started my first business, has 24 million people. It's in the middle of nowhere, but it's a very wealthy country. And a lot of people made millions copying ideas from the US, like Boost Juice. They copied Jamba Juice in the US, and she made, I think it was valued over $1 billion at one stage.
Wow.
So, yeah, looking at something that works in one city, one country, and replicating in other places is a no-brainer. At the same time, if you're a business and you got something that worked in one city, in one country, do what I do and scale really quickly, but you have to do it correctly. It's easier said than done. But before other people copy your idea and replicate it in other countries, Uber is a perfect example, or Uber Eats. I'm in Paris. In the last 2 weeks, I was in four different countries, four or five, and all of them had different apps to use for food delivery. In France, I think delivery was the most popular. In Spain, I think there was one called Glovo. In Germany, there's one called Lieferando. I don't know how to pronounce it. So Uber Eats came up with the idea, I think, in the US, Zomato before that. And then other people copied it in other countries and made millions. And I hear this story time and time again. And that's one thing I'm doing as well.
Wow. Yeah. Now, you talk in your training about building systems and processes. How can someone design their business processes if they're really just starting off?
Don't. It's just too early to think about scaling when you're starting out. So the first thing you need to do is just get a proof of concept. So when you're launching a business, don't plan for how you're going to deal with millions. And Mike Tyson says it really well. He says everyone has a plan until they get punched in the face. So you could have a great plan on how to scale your business. But when customers start to complain about a certain problem, or when you start dealing with logistical issues, or when your product starts failing, all your plans go to waste.
Yeah.
So, and the research does show that humans are actually not good at planning. And the study says that business plans are not as useful as many says they are, because the human brain is not designed to plan the way it's structured. We're better than other species on this planet in planning for the future, but we're still really, really bad for it. Now, it doesn't mean you know, this doesn't mean every decision you have to make is based on the now. No, you make decisions based on the future. And if you can delay gratification, you're going to win in life. You probably heard of the marshmallow test. They put kids, gave them marshmallows and said, you know, they put one marshmallow in front of them. They said to them, if you eat it now, you won't get another. But if you wait in a few minutes, I'll come back with another if you manage to wait. The kids that did eat the marshmallow ended up not succeeding in life and having a bad life. The kids that delayed gratification to get two marshmallows, and I'm not sure if they did three after that, managed to succeed in life. So delayed gratification is really important in life and in business. So in business, if you make decisions now that will not make you money right now, but they will make you money in a year or 2 years' time, which, you know, things like making sure your customers are happy, building a community. Building a community will not make you money now. But when you have a community, there's so many ways to monetize it. It's so hard to build a community. Mm-hmm. So planning in that sense, yes. But making decisions on, okay, I need to use that software because, you know, I can't deal with that many people now, but I'm sure I'll need it later. It's too early. Mm-hmm. When you should start looking at systems and scaling is when you start getting revenue. So when you get product market fit, when you get proof of concept, when you launch a product and people are voting with their money that they believe in it, then you can start looking at, okay, I've got something here. What's next?
Amen. Amen. Now, many businesses focus on growing their customer base, and that is important, but you help businesses to focus on their existing customer base. You call it customer-centric attitude. Can you explain what that means to our listeners?
Marketing is getting – I was actually speaking to my partner in the UK for my Free the UK and Ireland business just before this call. We finished the call about 5 minutes before our recording, 5-10 minutes before our recording. And I was saying to him, marketing, paid marketing is going to continue getting more and more expensive. Customer acquisition is going to continue to get more expensive. So you're complaining now how it's getting more expensive. It's going to be even worse. That means one thing. The future now is increasing the lifetime value of your existing customers mm-hmm. and the average order value and the frequency of purchase. But let's just stick to lifetime value. So the customers you have right now, I don't remember the numbers, but they're significantly more likely to buy again. When I say significantly, we're looking at 80-something percent more likely, if I've got my numbers right, likely to buy again from you. And they're more likely to spend more money with you. So if it costs you more to acquire a new customer and they're worth less, but it costs you less to get an existing customer to pay for your services again, and they're worth more, they'll pay more. For me, it's just pure logic.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So based on the fact that acquiring customers is getting more expensive, it's getting more competitive on all platforms, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, Google, across the board, and traditional media. It's getting more expensive. The only solution is engaging and building a community with existing customers. That's why I think people like yourself who have a podcast, people that have an audience, are going to win in the next 5 to 10 years, or let's not go 10 years, it's too far ahead, but the next 5 years. So then that's something I'm trying to do, and it's so difficult. It's just having people, a community, whether an existing customer or just someone that trusts me, I've got their attention. That's the most important thing. Getting people's attention is so expensive. When you have that, hold on it, cherish it, treat it with tremendous respect, because it's so difficult to get, and it's going to get more and more difficult.
Yeah. Plus, if you have existing customers and you're taking care of them, building value in their life, they're more apt to give you referrals to people you haven't even met. And they're just coming to you and now they're customers as well. So you're growing your customer base through those relationships, right?
Oh, exactly. I was listening to a podcast yesterday and they were talking about one of the things they mentioned is that how the younger generation, the millennials, they just don't. First, they're lonely. They're lonelier than we've ever been as a society, which is crazy to think, especially with the access of social media, etc. Mm-hmm. But they say they're lonely. They don't have friends, based on studies, lonelier than any other generation. And they just don't trust businesses, and they don't trust other people. But then people they don't know. But who they trust, their friends and people that are close to. So, yes, word of mouth is still by far the most powerful marketing tool. And for a business to succeed, I can't remember who says that, but if you look at the Net Promoter Score, which rates your customer satisfaction, If you have a rating of below 7 or 8, some VCs don't even bother looking at the business because it just means you're going to fail eventually. And that promoter score of 8 to 9 is necessary to succeed. So yeah, we're with my e-commerce businesses, we're obsessed with customers. And we do things that don't scale. Like if a customer's unhappy, we spend time talking to them. We send them gifts if they're sick, even if we don't get a lot of money from them. But those small gestures end up in a video review, end up in a written review, or end up with word of mouth.
Yeah, amen. What about branding? That's a popular topic today. Should a business focus on branding?
It's such an overused term. look, it's a tricky one. A while ago, I would say to my team, don't waste money on branding, because I would say that to my PPC team. Don't waste money on branding, because just spend money on getting customers. Why? Because when you're spending money to get customers, to get revenue, that's branding as well. People are knowing about you. But it's not that simple. Branding is... it's such an important topic. It's a very loaded topic, because on one side, you could say branding is dead. And who was talking about it? Professor at MIT, I think. I can't remember. He's got, if you go on YouTube, put L2 Inc., letter L, number 2, and then INC. They got incredible content, very fact-based. For L2 Inc., branding is dead, and see what comes up. But that was about 2-3 years old. And he says that, you know, branding is dead. Why? Because Amazon has commoditized everything. Mm-hmm. And now to order things with voice coming up, people are just going to order through voice. Like, Alexa, I'm out of toilet paper. And Alexa will immediately choose the right toilet paper and send it to you. You don't choose it. It's Alexa choosing it for you. Mm-hmm. So people just want convenience and speed.
Yeah.
But... that's not the case. If that's the case, I'm screwed, because I build brands. But it's not the case, because with everything being commoditized, Robert, brands are more important than ever. And that's what I've found, and that's what other people argue, is that people don't just buy a product for the product. They buy the product for the experience. They want to stand for something. It needs to represent something for them. People buy Nike shoes because it represents a certain brand image. People buy Apple, which is more expensive and for some, you know, less user-friendly, etc. But it stands for something. So in that sense, with everything being commoditized and everyone feeling insignificant, and you know, we're part of a global community, which means one thing. You just feel like you want to stand out. You want to be different. Especially like when I go to China, I feel like an ant, because there's just so many people. It's such a massive country. And I start feeling pretty, you know, I don't feel too well. When I'm in Europe, I feel better, because it's not as many people. So I feel more special and unique, which is good. Everyone, it's a human, innate human need, feeling special, feeling unique. And brands allow you to do that. You represent yourself with a brand. You represent yourself. People look at the clothes you wear as an identity. People look at the phone you use, the car you drive. Even the food you eat, or it could be the glass sunglasses you wear. It all reflects you to other people, but also you personally. You're part of a community. There's a machine called Thermomix in Australia and Europe that's really popular now in the US, and they've got an incredible. Oh, you look at the US Instant Pot. They've got an incredible community of people that you know. That work together on cooking and creating things in the kitchen. To take it a step further, and I think that'll be really interesting for your audience. I was listening to a podcast. I haven't finished it. I'm still listening to it now. Like, I stopped it for this podcast to chat to you, but I'll listen to it after I finish my interviews. I'll finish it. And it was analyzing a brand called an agency called, let me open my podcast. The value there is tremendous. I'm learning a lot of Jin Lane, J-I-N Lane, L-A-N-E. Incredibly valuable. Now, Jin Lane was behind some of the most successful brands, unicorn brands that launched in the last few years. Really successful brands. I think they're part of Casper, Sweetgreen's, Hims and Hers. All of them that, you know, made hundreds of millions really quickly and got into the billion-dollar mark. And the way that now they close their agency because they want to launch their own brands. And in that podcast interview, they're explaining their approach to e-commerce. And they're building a brand and they're building an experience for the customer. They sell kitchen equipment, but that's not all. They sell the equipment. You belong to a community and you get access to a chef for, I think, 2 to 4 weeks via text messaging to help you make the most out of the equipment you buy. So it's no longer, they're not selling the product, you buy it and that's the end of it, which is what Amazon is, but they're selling you an experience. And if you want to succeed in the age of Amazon, of course you can sell on Amazon and make money there, but it's just so brutal, you're competing against the Chinese. But the way to stand out is to actually have an experience. What's Amazon's weakness? Amazon has incredible strengths. What's the weakness at Amazon? It's all commoditized. You don't speak to a person, you get the product, that's the end of it. That's it. Which is good for many, including people like me. I don't have time for an experience. I just work all the time and I dance and I do nothing else. But other people want to enjoy cooking, want to enjoy, to be part of a community when they buy their mattress, a community that helps you sleep better, for example. Mm-hmm. And that's where you could stand out from Amazon and you can stand out from your competitors and build a brand. So yes, building a brand is more important than ever. It's more difficult than ever. And that's where having an experience along with a product would help tremendously.
Yeah. I mean, you talk about speaking to your audience and things like that. You have a podcast for your business as well. Do you believe businesses should use podcasts to help grow their client base?
Sure. Now, I don't have my podcast yet. It's just pure YouTube content. Okay. But I find incredible. I want to launch it. It's something that is next on our list. So much value. I think everyone should have a podcast. If you think that it's overcrowded, it is crowded, but not overcrowded. There's, you know, if you look at how many podcasts there are, a few tens or hundreds of thousands, there's over 1 billion blogs. So that's crowded. But podcasts is just starting out. It's not even that mature in the US compared to Asia. It's a lot more mature in Asia and the way they monetize it.
Yeah. South Korea is number one in the world.
There you go. Japan is probably in the top three as well.
Yeah, I think the United States is number three. Yeah.
Oh, there you go. So Japan would be second. Yeah. I think the US would be three or four because China would be there as well. And they're moving really quick with podcasts.
If someone wanted to get in touch with you to ask a question, maybe apply for one of your programs or in trainings or possibly do an interview such as this, how can they do that? How could someone get in touch with you?
Sure. Just Google my name, Mario Nofull. Nofull is N for Nelly, A for Alpha, W for Whiskey, F for Fred, A for Alpha, L for Larry. Just Google my name and there's many ways to contact me.
Amen. Amen. And folks, you know, he's on LinkedIn. He's, you know, all over YouTube, on his website. And you need to go check it out. I'm going to put links to all this down in the show notes down below. Are you a Christian entrepreneur, coach, or author with a message that needs to be heard? Picture this, your voice reaching thousands, your story inspiring hearts, and your business flourishing like never before. Introducing Faithcasters, the ultimate platform that connects faith-driven professionals like you with the power of podcasting. Become a sought-after guest on faith-based podcasts. Share your unique insights and connect with like-minded individuals who share your passion for faith and entrepreneurship as well. Imagine your expertise reaching a wider audience, expanding your network, and propelling your business to new heights. Well, it's all within reach with Faithcasters. So don't wait. Take the first step today on your journey to greatness by visiting our website at faithcaster.org. That's faithcaster.org. Join the Faithcasters community now and unleash the full potential of your faith-driven enterprise. You do not want to miss this opportunity. Faithcasters, where faith meets podcasting and your dreams become reality. Visit faithcaster.org. Let's soar together. And remember, anyone can be a podcaster, but only a Christian can become a faithcaster. Faithcasters, your voice, your platform, your success.